but not its spirit, Lyra put in. That's what scoundrels do.
No one asked you, Dante muttered.
He rolled his eyes at the stars. Callie's an excellent leader. He's unorthodox but logical. Bold, too. While his particular mix of fearlessness and schemery is precisely what got us into this mess with Setevan, I can think of no one more likely to bring us, and the Norren, through to the other side in better shape than where we left. Now can I see what's in the god's damned box? Blaze twisted in the saddle to regard the others.
What says the audience?
Heartfelt, Lyra nodded.
I can't weigh in on whether it's true, Morn said, but anyone would be flattered to hear it.
Fan took a moment to register their stares.
It was good.
I should make you put it in writing. Blaze passed over the box.
You won't be disappointed.
Dante cradled the box in his lap. The lid opened noiselessly. Inside, four brooches rested on a bed of black velvet, ivory carvings of the white tree banded by a ring of black iron. The facets of a sapphire winked from the trunk of one tree. A note was tucked into a slit in the velvet. Variants of your new toy. Distribute as you see fit. I suggest you take the pretty one, as it will match your eyes. They may be bonded to the recipients with a drop of the intended wearer's blood. Don't say I never did anything for you. See.
Dante closed the box. He wanted nothing more than to pass out the loons and deduce whatever special properties the old man had woven into the sapphire brooch, but his horse had just passed the inn-gate. In less than an hour, they'd depart the city, back into the wilds.
The road spooled south through farms and forests. The first night they slept beneath the pines a quarter mile from the road. The second they found a crossroads inn at a farming village. The third night found them in Kals, a modest town mixed with humans and Norren. They entered the Norren territories on the fourth day. Patchy snow dusted the open fields and low hills. A few times a day, a wandering clan appeared on a ridge or stoked fires from the protection of a draw, but offered neither greeting nor threat. Dante had passed out one loon to Blaze and, after some thought, gave Morn and Lyra the other two. Callie could always make more later. And if either the Norren or the woman turned out to be a traitor-in-waiting, Dante could just destroy his, severing the links between them forever. Because the sapphire loon, it turned out, was a hub for them all. By rotating the jewel 90 degrees, Dante could choose which of the others to communicate with, including, if he returned the sapphire to its original alignment, with Callie. He saw no forts or walls in the territories. Few villages or proper buildings of any kind. Nothing, in other words, that would present a threat to an incoming army. The road turned southwest. Short green winter wheat fought the last of the snows. They crossed out of the proper Norren lands and into the unsettled boundaries of the south. For a full day, they walked their mounts along flat stretches that either had been, soon would be, or were currently being ploughed. Oxen, workers, and short, sturdy houses dotted the fields of brown and green. Morn watched them steadily, tipping back his head as if trying to place an elusive smell. Town smoke rose from the clear horizon. An hour after dark, they reached Shan, the local capital, and bought up 5 rooms at a fieldstone inn. Dante chafed at the price. They could easily have made do with 3, but they had appearances to keep up. Fan led them up a well-trod dirt path the following morning. With the sun approaching noon, Dante stopped in front of a rough stone manor. 3 round towers filled out its body, 4 stories high and equally wide. 2-story connectors linked the silo-like wings. In the fields beyond, wooden barns and outbuildings stood above the young green fields. A light breeze ruffled Dante's hair. He glanced at Fan.
I guess you should announce us.
Don't be silly, my lord.
Fan gestured up the gravel path.
We're in Tatornin now. If you send your servants ahead to announce you, the locals will look at you like you've asked for a golden toilet.
We should get one of those, Blaze said. I've always thought our silver seats were déclassé.
Any other helpful advice? Dante said. Fan tapped his delicate fingers together. They're not fond of shaking hands, perhaps because theirs are always so dirty. In any event, doing so will brand you as an outsider. Furthermore, deposit your boots at the door unless you would like the head of the household to deposit his between your buttocks.
I think that's enough.
Dante dismounted and crunched up the path. He thumped the knocker of the banded wooden door. A middle-aged man appeared in the doorway, stocky and stubbled, his round gut and swollen biceps placing equal strains on the fabric of his brown doublet.
"Is Lord Brant in?" Dante said.
The man smiled.
"Unless I've been overthrown in the last 5 minutes."
He turned and bellowed back into the house.
"Chilla! Have I been overthrown recently?"
"You will, if you don't knock off that hollering,"
a woman called back. Brant chuckled and turned back to Dante.
"Looks like I'm still the lord."
His gaze dropped to the two brooches on Dante's chest.
"You must be, what's her name, from Narashtovic?"
Dante galloned. He didn't offer his hand.
"Thought you'd be older. Well, come inside. Your friends, too. I'll send a man to see to the horses."
Dante had plenty of time to take in the household, as he picked the knots from his boots and placed his footwear beside the door. Hard winter light gushed through the windows of the large round room. The windows were glass, and fine-stitched rugs covered nearly every inch of the wooden floors, but there was a simplicity to the room beyond the informality of the baronet who owned it. Above the fieldstone fireplace, a hoe rested across two pegs, displayed as proudly as a knight's blade.
"The same one my ancestor used to first break these fields," Brant said, catching him looking. "Scrub off the rust, and I'm sure it still could."
"Nonsense,"
a woman smiled from the stone staircase.
"You'd rather churn the dirt with your own teeth than let that old thing touch open air."
"I said it could," Brant said mildly.
The woman was his wife, Jilla. While she made introductions, Brant trundled off to dispatch riders to inform the local lords of the group's arrival. After a lunch of pork, potatoes, and the best bread Dante'd ever tasted, Brant brought their horses back from the stable and led them on a tour of the estate.
"We'll have dinner tomorrow," he told Dante,
rolling atop his cracked leather saddle.
"And tonight, of course. Imagine me taking you in and then leaving you to fend for yourselves."
He laughed, voice carrying on the flickering wind.
"That's when we'll speak, I mean."
"That's fine," Dante said. "Our time isn't so precious just yet.
Still, I'll try to help you make the most of it. I have a rough idea why you're down here. I'm sure your offer will be a right one, but don't bet your winter on it being snapped up."
"Don't tell me they're afraid of the king."
"Why would they be? All he's got is an army, and a mountain of gold, and a kingdom of people who think no more about beating a Norrin than a donkey that stepped on their foot."
Dante laughed. "I'll modulate my expectations accordingly." Brant filled the rest of the day with small talk about how winter had treated him, his expectations for the approaching spring, and questions about Narashtovic, which he hadn't visited in 12 years, meaning he'd seen none of its resurgence with his own eyes.
"Last time I saw the place, it was empty as an old man's mouth," he said, during the post-dinner discussion,
his socked feet propped on a chair.
"You make it sound like it could sit next to Setevan in the jeweled crown of Garsk."
"Not quite yet." Dante sat down his beer, a blueberry and clover-tinged lager Jilla had brewed over the winter. "But
The Dead City is getting to be a more ironic name by the day.
Brant nodded, uncharacteristically quiet.
Things change fast, don't they?
Dante went to bed not long after. His room was snug and draught-free. In the morning, Brant brought them to town after breakfast to show off Shan's windmills and irrigation canals. It was a simple place, built to last. If war came, Dante hoped it spared these windy fields.
Brant's fellow baronets arrived that afternoon. Like Brant, most of the six lords showed signs of long days on the farms, despite their noble titles, their forearms ropey, their faces tanned and lined. Their opinions were as large as their shoulders, their appetites too. At the long feast table that took up most of the lower floor of the second wing, they sat at attention while Jilla blessed the food, a stripped-down version of the ritual that involved a couple words and a couple flicks of salt water from her fingers. Then fell to the meal like it would be their last, disassembling roast chickens and vegetable pies faster than the two servants could bring out the next dish. Steaming bread appeared by the platter, puffy white loaves, round discs studded with nuts and grains, moist, crumbly slices embedded with raisins and dripping with butter, flat bread smeared with almond paste. Dante assumed this wealth of breads was just an extravagance of the feast, but over the next few days he learned it was entirely standard for Tatonin. Almost every meal involved their staple crop in some way, be it the wrapper of boiled pork dumplings, or in the pan-fried slabs that Tatoners carried as portable meals, pie-like medleys of boiled meat, raw nuts, potatoes, and vegetables, all mashed up and held together with a glue of oily dough. These were the most perfect invention Dante had ever seen. As normal for such gatherings, the lords' dinner-time talk stayed light. How the last snows had treated them, the town cloudsman's predictions for a mild spring. Finally, the farmers toyed with chicken skins, juice-soaked bread crusts, and their fourth beers of the night. Unprompted, the oldest of the men, a thin and wind-chapped man named Ray, pointed a chicken bone at Dante.
"So, what is it you want from us?"
Dante swallowed beer to clear his throat.
"You've heard, I'm sure, of the recent unrest."
"I'm sure."
"We're not friends of any war, but we are friends of the Norrin. We fear that if invasion comes, many innocents will starve."
Ray bunched up his grey brows.
"Do you think? Most I've seen do plenty well leeching off the land."
"Plenty of them live in towns just like you or me," Dante said. "If an army marches on its stomach, towns and their granaries are the stepping stones they use to cross the river of conflict."
"Now that's a pretty metaphor," said a fat lord named Vic, his tone much drier than his beer-foamed beard.
Blaze clunked down his mug.
"That's because he's too dumb to say stuff straight. Thing is, civilians will starve. You've got food here. We want some of it, and we'll pay money to buy it."
"Oh," Vic said. "When you put it like that, it makes sense enough."
"But not why Narashtovic gives us sheep's shit," Ray said.
"We sympathize over common suffering," Dante said. The faces of the baronets were cow-like, slump-jawed. He clenched his teeth and let a long breath through his nose. "I'm from Malin. A few years ago I hardly knew a thing about Aron, except that he'd scythe off your head if you spoke his name over open water. Because anyone who did talk about him, the real Aron, the Aron of Narashtovic and Gask, got their head hacked off. Whipped, at the very least.
Which is funny, because that's exactly what happens to any Norrin slave who decides he doesn't want to be a slave anymore.
Why does Narashtovic support the Norrin?
Because Setevan is full of shitheads.
Maybe they'll march. Maybe they won't.
But if they do, we want to be there to pick the Norrin back up as soon as the king's done stamping on their backs,
That drew a few wry chuckles. Brant smiled and scratched his neck.
None of us are too happy about those tax-mad shitheads, either. They could cut our levies in half if they weren't so obsessed with clinging to every scrap of their creaky empire.
Brant leaned back, chin inclined.
I'd be happy to sell whatever wheat I can part with, but it won't be as much as you want.
Why's that? Blaze said.
Everyone needs bread when the swords come out, Vic said. And when food's needed, farmers need it most of all. They're the first ones the men with swords come running for.
Dante gazed at his plate. Leaving you with little left over to sell.
That's the shape of it, Brant said.
Of course, Morn piped up. The bandits don't help.
At some point during the dinner, Morn had left his satellite table to stand against the curved wall, being careful not to lean against its tapestry of a deer silhouetted on a ridgeline. As a result, he was directly behind some of the lords, who had to turn their heads like owls in order to join the others in staring at him.
"Bandits, you say?" Brant said.
Morn nodded. "Lenoran bandits. Unless they are human bandits doing a very clever job of pretending to be Norrin."
"You know that how," Ray said slowly. "You running with them."
If Morn was insulted, he didn't let it show.
"They've left signs all over your roads and fields."
He nodded at Vic.
"If you're who they mean by the fat one, they're going to take your eastbound caravan this weekend."
Vic bolted up, knocking back his chair.
"You are running with them."
"He's been with us for weeks," Dante said. "Before that, he belonged to a clan that lives 100 miles from here."
Brant gestured Vic back to his seat. "There anything you can do about this? Or just tell us things we already know?"
Morn glanced between Dante and Blaze.
"That's up to my chiefs."
"How much have you been losing?" Blaze said.
"Between guards, payment, and product?"
Brant shook his head at the ceiling.
"All told, a tenth of what I take out of the ground."
Blaze drank the rest of his beer to hide his grin.
"Here's the deal. We take out the bandits, you sell that 10% to us. At half market rate."
Ray scowled.
"Two-thirds."
"Half."
Ray, you're missing 60% of your brain," Brant said. "Half's a whole lot better than none."
He extended his hand to Dante, then shook with Blaze and Morn as well.
"You clear the roads, you got your grain."
That settled the matter. With the business of business complete, the assembly turned to the business of getting drunk. By the time Dante got to bed, head spinning, he had all but forgotten they'd pledged to rid Tatonin of an entire clan of Norrin. Hangovers made the morning slow to materialize. Dante picked over his breakfast of toast and eggs and sweet, soppy cheese. Blaze joined him, took one look at his plate, and set his head down on the table.
"What did we commit to?"
Dante said. Blaze didn't move.
"Ask that shaggy mountain of ours."
"Are we going to have to kill a bunch of Norrin, Morn? Because that doesn't strike me as a very productive way of helping them."
Morn looked up from the window where he sat reading one of the manor's books.
"I don't know."
"What you mean you don't know?"
"I mean, in a very literal sense, I don't even know whether Blaze is going to vomit in the next 5 minutes. How should I know how it'll go with a gang of violent bandits?"
Dante rolled his eyes.
"How were you thinking it would go when you butted in last night?"
The Norrin shrugged his heavy shoulders.
"That depends on the clan. I'd listen if someone told me we'd be overrun and butchered unless I stopped stealing."
"And all we have to do is find them?"
Not hard. Not if you know how to read their signs, which I do.
Blaze nibbled a corner of Dante's toast.
Why would they leave big old directions all over the road?
Morn stared at his oversized hands.
Because if you are a clan in a hostile land, that makes you a thing that is a threat. A horde of bandits. An army. But if a clan splits up, a person sees one Norrin, three Norrin, they don't think much. If you're a chief, how do you bring your scattered clan back together when it's time to act or move? You can shout very loudly. You can set signal fires that can be seen by everyone with working eyes. Or you can leave signs so small your enemies will never know you're there.
Dante sipped his tea.
But you can find the signs to find them, too.
Morn shook his head. I don't need wild signs to find a clan.
After breakfast, Dante found Brandt and informed him they'd set out shortly. Brandt sent a man to prep their horses. Dante located Fan, who was holding a lively conversation with the farrier, and waited for a break in the talk.
I was thinking you might find it more comfortable to stay here.
Fan smiled slyly.
What a polite way of saying I might get myself killed.
You don't mind?
Not at all.
Fan doffed his round black cap.
As you pursue the art of war, I will once more turn to the art of speech.
The horses' manes and tails had been clipped and combed. Morn led the way down the main path to the road, scanning the ruts and weedy shoulders, clinging to the saddle of his plough horse. Wind stirred the long grass.
See anything? Blay said after a mile of travel.
Morn leaned forward, peering into the grass.
They say the young blonde one is very homely.
And the Norrin wonder why everyone hates them.
Morn twisted in his saddle, giving Blaze a stony look that soon softened to a smile.
It's a good thing I know you.
Blaze tipped his head to one side.
I wouldn't go that far.
They reached the road into town by early afternoon. Morn led them east at a casual walk. A few times an hour he pulled up, dismounted clumsily, and crouched beside a stick or sprig of grass. His examination of bits of plants and dirt reminded Dante of divination, of reading the guts of unfortunate turkeys, but Morn moved with a stolid purpose. Mid-afternoon he cut south from the road into an unploughed reach of crumbling hills with grassy heads and dense, thorny trees in their folds.
"They're around," Morn said. "But unless we are better at this than I think we are, we probably won't see them until they want us to."
"Why would they want us to see them?" Lyra said.
"Because there is a certain joy in revealing yourself to the thing you're about to kill."
Morn rode cautiously and inexpertly through the grass and rocks. Snows hid in the deep shadows between hills. Blue-throated birds perched on bare twigs, peeping questions back and forth. They left the last of the carefully tilled fields behind. Here and there, huge boulders stood alone in the flatlands, as if dropped there by a forgetful god. When people spoke of the oldest places, they often mentioned mountains, forbidding mists and unclimbable spires. What they really meant was that mountains were pristine. No one had any business in the icy peaks except for hermits and the insane. But people could live in this undulating prairie. To Dante, the fact they chose not to, or once had but abandoned the place long ago, made the silence and wind more primordial and unknown than the most remote crags. Morn got down from his horse to proceed on foot. He mumbled to himself, gazing at flattened grass, his words stolen by the wind.
"What's that?" Dante said.
Morn glanced up.
I said they know we're here.
Send you a letter, did they?
Sort of.
The Norrin bent down and pointed to a branch of a jagged shrub. Two of the thorns were snapped at the base, dangling by narrow fibers.
This says hello. That they use thorns means it is not a pleasant hello, although maybe they only use them because that's all that seems to grow out here.
Dante shrugged. At least they're breaking thorns, and not our arms.
He dismounted to better read the trail for himself. Except for the clan's deliberate wild signs, which Morn mostly had to point out himself, the usual markers were in short supply. A scuffed rock here, a stomped leaf there. The day dwindled. When Morn shook his head at the dusk, they descended to a crease between hills and set up camp.
Build a fire as you like, Morn said. If they want to find us, they will.
That's comforting, Blay said. Well, if we're going to get stabbed in our sleep, I'd prefer to die in a warm bed.
He and Lyra stoked a small fire. Dante pan-cooked potatoes to go with their bread and jerky.
He pulled second watch. When Morn woke him to change shifts, Dante found a dead rabbit and sent it to circle the hills, but he didn't see a single Norrin during his watch.
Throughout the morning, the wild signs drew Morn further and further east. The day was a bust. After an identical dinner to their previous supper, Dante twiddled his brooch. A moment later, Callie's disembodied voice spoke into his ear.
So, where are you right now?
Dante smiled at the old man's tangible excitement.
Chasing wild geese through the plains of Tatornin.
Callie laughed.
This is incredible, you know. I've had to resist summoning you up every night to find out the latest.
Same here.
Dante filled him in on the negotiations with the baronets and their as-yet fruitless hunt for the Norrin bandits. He could almost see Callie nodding along.
If anything big is stirring in Gask, it's so large no one knows what they're looking at yet. I'll let you know if anything changes. For now, I advise continuing your search.
Will do.
I bet it's cold there, isn't it? We've had the most wonderful inland breeze, not that I've noticed in my warm little tower.
Good night, Callie.
Dante cut off the link. That night, the wind felt as cold as wet iron. Wind and birds and grass and stones. Despite Callie's reassurance, the relentless landscape wore at Dante's resolve. Days in, and he still hadn't seen a single Norrin. Besides Morn, of course, who read tracks too subtle for Dante to notice. High grey clouds carpeted the sky. If it rained or snowed, even Morn might not be able to continue the trail. On the other hand, rain would mean a chance to refill their water skins. They hadn't seen a stream since the morning before. The grass, meanwhile, had gone notably more yellow. They could always turn to the shaded snows, but even those had grown mean, shallow patches gritty with dirt. Dante sipped miserishly. He needn't have worried. They crested a ridge. A shallow, bowl-like valley bottomed out in a deep blue lake, whose octopoidal arms extended into the crannies of the intersecting hills. They led their horses through the pines and birches gathered around the shore. The waters were murky and green, but this place was so far removed from human stains, Dante didn't even think about boiling his water before drinking it. The horses appeared to have no such worries either, slurping away at the algal shore.
"I don't feel like we're making progress," Dante said after they'd all had a drink and a bite of bread. "If we don't see anything in the next couple of days, I think we should move on."
Morn smiled faintly. "We won't have to wait that long."
"You sound awfully sure of yourself," Blay said.
"It's a feeling I have."
"That sounds very scientific."
"Specifically, the feeling of being watched."
"Funny you should say that." Blaze rolled his neck, "because
I have the feeling of a stiff back and a sore ass, and that scraped-up feel your mouth gets from eating crusty old bread, all of which points to the greater feeling of tromping around an empty wilderness with no hope of finding anything more substantial than dried-up deer turds and... Shut up! The voice came behind them, soft and faintly accented. Blaze whirled to his feet. Dante dropped his water. Three Norrin stood among the white-barked birches, bows in hand. The foremost gazed steadily at Morn with one eye, his other a scarred-up hole. This has gone on long enough.
You're the ones who dragged it out,
Morn said mildly.
Dragged what out? The man said. This is our land. We do as we please.
And apparently it pleases you to treat the humans who live here as prey.
The one-eyed man shrugged.
It's our land. So why are you in it?
Are you the chief?
I'm the one in front of you.
Morn shook his head. I need the chief.
I need a new wife, the man said. I have the one I've got.
Then attack us now. That's the only way you'll stop us. Assuming you win. If you don't, your clan will have three less men between us and its head.
The man glanced at his two clansmen. They maintained their silence. He shook his head at Morn.
Come with me.
Morn rose. Dante followed behind, reins in one hand, Netha in the other. The clansmen led them around the foot of the next hill. There, beside the wind-rippled waters, three dozen Norrin joked and lounged and carved and weaved.
Did you know how close we were?
Dante said.
Morn glanced over his shoulder.
I had an idea. The last few wild signs have been lies.
Unless they are so dumb they actually don't know east from west, they were trying to throw me off.
At the camp, chatter ceased. Half the men and women reached for bows and swords and spears. The one-eyed Norrin gestured Morn to stop, then joined his clansmen. He approached and spoke with a seated woman in her mid-thirties. After a minute, the pair walked across the springy grass and stood in front of Morn.
I don't know you, she said.
Her braids were brown with strands of red and black.
I'm Morn, of the Clan of the Nine Pines.
The woman nodded.
Whale, chieftain of the Clan of the Golden Field. What do you want?
For you to stop attacking the farmers here.
You're not going to get what you want.
Morn gazed at the lake.
Why prey on men?
It's simpler, Whale said. What simplest is best?
There's nothing best about the Norrin who'll starve if war comes to the territories. If you stop your raids, we'll have the grain to save many of our people's lives.
She smiled with half her mouth, eyes lit with something much older than her years.
That's many ifs. If war comes, why not take the grain and dole it out ourselves? Who are you?
Her smile deepened.
Who says we're not already fighting a war of our own?
The humans with me are from Narashtovik.
He gestured to Dante and the others.
This is part of their plan to help us.
I don't know them. I don't know any humans who help Norrin.
Then I think I'm finished.
Morn turned to her clansmen.
Are you unswayed by my words?
The man didn't hesitate.
I'm unswayed.
Morn smiled at Whale.
I don't sense any sway from you.
I'm unswayed, she said.
Dumb. I hoped I was wrong.
Morn smiled. He gazed at the lake, his eyes as distant as whatever force had dumped the stray boulders across the empty lands.
Then I request Solonat.
Whale's smile broke the ice.
You're not from the Golden Fields. You have no right to succeed me.
Not for your place,
for this one boon.
Whale glanced quickly at her one-eyed clansman. He met her gaze. She turned back to Morn, eyes smoldering. What weapons?
Bow,
Morn said. You challenged, I shoot first.
I know.
Prepare! She strode back toward her clan, many of whom stood as she approached, sensing the moment. The one-eyed man went with her. Blaze gaped after her. Is this some kind of duel?
Morn shrugged. She's going to shoot at me. If I'm still alive, I'll shoot back. This continues until one of us decides to stop. Or can't voice an opinion either way, which is taken as implied concession of defeat.
Are you serious? Dante said. I thought you settled things with rhetoric.
Yes, but we didn't start doing that until all our best leaders kept getting shot, stabbed, and clubbed to death.
Well, you can't just let us shoot at you, Blaze said. You might get shot.
Morn sighed. This is the only way to stop them, without killing them all, or doing something else I haven't thought about. But this is the only way I know.
Why would you do this? Dante said. Lyra cocked her head. Because he believes. Dante bared his teeth.
You don't have to do this, Morn. The war won't hinge on a few wagons of wheat. I get the impression we'll need every resource we can get, Morn said. Besides, this isn't Narashtovik. You can't tell me what I can't do.
He gave Dante a small smile.
Well, you can, but guess how much it'll matter.
Dante had no argument. He couldn't see the future. Not well enough to know whether the grain of Tatonin would wind up making any difference to the Norrin. He could see that if they wanted to do any real good, they'd all have to do things they didn't want along the way. To put their lives on the line. Right now, he needed Morn to take his turn.
Good luck, then. And thank you.
Can you even shoot a bow? Blaze said.
Of course, Morn said. The real question is whether she can.
The one-eyed Norrin returned with a quiver and a bow taller than Dante.
This way.
Morn followed him through the birches. Up slope, the hill leveled off into breeze-swept grass. Whales stood 100 yards away, bow in hand. Morn stopped in the open grass and tested the pull of his long weapon. The clansman removed 5 arrows from the quiver and stuck them point down in the dirt. He eyed the humans.
Step away. Interfere and forfeit 2 things, your friend's challenge and your lives.
Blaze snorted.
Well, I don't agree to those terms.
Dante backed off 10 yards, where he stood with Lyra and Blaze. Across the hill, Whale licked her thumb and raised it to the wind. Downslope, the clan of the Golden Field watched tight-faced from the knee-high grass. The one-eyed Norrin looked to Morn, who nodded, and then to Whale, who did the same. Whale raised her bow, arrow pointed straight skyward, then drew back and leveled it at Morn. She held it there for several seconds. Dante willed her shot to fly foul, for her elbow to twitch, for the wind to gust, for the arm of Joson Joe to reach down from the sky and squish Whale into the dirt. She let fly. The arrow whipped above the grass. It struck Morn's chest with a wet smack. He collapsed to the ground. Soft groans rose from the watching clan. Dante raced to Morn. Netha flocked to his fingers. The Norrin lay on his back, blinking, face white beneath his beard. The arrow jutted from his ribs.
Get away,
he hissed.
You've got a fucking arrow in your chest.
This isn't over.
Morn rolled to his side, eyes widening in pain. He found his knees and reached for the dropped bow. The clan murmured. 100 yards distant, Whale stood perfectly still. Morn pulled an arrow from the dirt, but barely began his draw before his string snarled into the arrow twitching from its ribs. Gingerly, he set his bow and arrow in the grass. A far-off look washed across his face. He grabbed the arrow in his chest with both hands and pulled. It slurped free. Morn staggered, blood dripping from his wound. Teeth bared, he picked up his bow and drew it back. His elbows quivered, jogging his aim. He breathed through his nose, jaw clenched, until his arms steadied. He fired. He sat down before the arrow landed. The arrow slammed into Whale's chest, spinning her into the grass. She didn't move. Dante sprinted back to Morn.
"Help her," Morn waved.
Dante goggled. "Shut up and lie down." Morn lurched halfway to his feet, bloody hand bunching in a fist.
"My deal was with her. What happens if she dies?"
"Lyle's balls!" Dante charged across the slope. The one-eyed Norrin was already crouched beside Whale, along with three other clansmen. The man turned to Dante, reaching for his sword. Dante held up his empty hands. "I'm a healer, goddammit. Let me see her."
"You die if she does."
"Yes, yes, get out of my way." The man frowned, trying not to let hope get the better of him. Dante knelt. The arrow stuck from the left side of Whale's chest. For a moment he feared it had hit her heart, but her chest was rising in shallow jerks. He reached for a knife and cut her clothes from the wound. The shaft had sunk deep between her ribs. Dante wiped blood on his pants.
"You'll have to push it out the other side."
The Norrin glanced between each other, silently conferring. The one-eyed man nodded and rolled Whale onto her side. Dante cleaned his knife on his sleeve and cut open his much-abused left forearm. Beside him, the one-eyed man grabbed the arrow shaft and bore down. Whale snarled, eyes clenched shut. The arrowhead broke through her skin. The one-eyed Norrin snapped off the fletching and drew the broken remainder from Whale's body. Her blood flowed thickly, pulsing with the cycle of her beating heart. Nether roiled from Dante's hands into the hole through Whale's chest. Blood gushed unabated. Dante could feel the impatience of her clansmen, their fear and worry, ready to morph into rage and pain. But he could feel the changes in Whale's body, too. Torn vessels sealing shut as Nether smoothed rough edges together. Flesh meeting flesh, and becoming one flesh. Within a minute, she stopped bleeding. Within two, both holes through her chest were covered in firm, black scabs. Dante popped to his feet and ran to Morn. Blaze bore down on the bandage he and Lyra had wrapped around Morn's chest, putting pressure to the wound. The cotton sopped with red. Dante delved inside, flooding the Norrin's veins with hungry nether. Morn's eyes stayed closed as Dante stabilized the bleeding. The one-eyed Norrin walked up, hands sticky with blood.
"We'd like you to stay here until she wakes up."
Blaze cocked his head.
"So you can stab us if she doesn't?"
"She will. Will your friend?"
"I think so," Dante said. He nodded.
"Then she will want to speak to him when he does."
"I think you can trust him," Lyra said as she returned to Whale. "He's protective, that's all."
"So are mother bears," Blaze said, "and I wouldn't want to share a den with one after I shot one of her cubs."
"I'm going to clean up and move the horses."
Lyra stood and headed for the lake.
"Yell if he betrays you."
By the time she returned, the one-eyed Norrin, whose name was Skull, had brought Dante and Blaze into camp proper and served up pan-fried fish and bread. Aroused perhaps by the smell, Morn stirred, blinking through the pain.
"Did I not die?"
"You'll be fine," Dante said.
"As your physician, however, I insist you refrain from armed duels for the next 3 weeks, ideally for the rest of your life."
Gingerly, Morn touched his bandages.
"Has anyone ever told you getting shot by an arrow really, really hurts?"
"Blaze, repeatedly, and without shame."
Blaze wiped fish grease from his mouth.
Well, it does.
No member of the clan spoke to them except Skoll, who came by to ask Morn how he was doing and nod at his fast recovery.
Dante woke at dawn, lightly sore.
Birds peeped from birches. Fish rose to suck insects from the surface. Skoll came to see him while he explored the far side of the lake. Whale was awake. Her face was pale, haggard.
I heard you didn't let me die.
I'm saintly like that, Dante said. We needed to make sure you stuck to your promise.
Skoll would have kept it for me.
She turned to Morn.
You shoot too well.
Like I had a choice, Morn said. I couldn't let you have a second shot.
I couldn't believe it when you got back up. I knocked you on your ass.
I should have stayed there. It was much comfier.
Whale smiled, then coughed into her hand, which she then checked for blood.
The clan of the Golden Field will stop our raids, and ensure no one else takes our place. Let the farmers know.
Moore nodded.
Then our solunat is fulfilled.
Good.
She gazed out on the quiet lake.
If the humans march on the territories, you know where to find us.
Dante packed up his bedroll. They made their goodbyes and rode north from the lake. He was tempted to contact Cali via Loon, then and there, but wanted to confirm their deal with Brant first, and then deliver all the news to the old man in one fell swoop. It would be much more impressive that way. Really drive home to Cali why he trusted so much to two of the youngest figures in the sealed citadel. Without the need to hunt for tracks or Norrin wild sign, they reached the road by nightfall and the town of Shan shortly thereafter. With Morn looking worn out, Dante bought rooms in an inn and hired a rider to make all haste for Brant's with the message they would return tomorrow, accompanied by an announcement. In the morning, Dante checked Morn's wound, which was crusty and disgusting but showed no signs of excess redness or swelling. Followed it up with a brief walk around town to restore his appetite, then returned to the inn for a breakfast of beef, bacon, bread, and green beans, topped with crispy onions. After so many cold, hard meals on the trail, it made him never want to stray from the road again. At Brant's three-winged manor, the brawny lord met them with an anxious smile.
"What's the word?"
"Hello, for one," Dante said.
"Don't play coy, spill your guts or I'll spill them across the pig troughs."
Blaze yawned.
"I hear beer's a peerless interrogation technique."
Brant's smile was as open as the fields.
"Then prepare to be tortured within an inch of your life."
The kitchen was warm and smelled of rhubarb and cherries. Brant brought up a small barrel of hoppy beer and poured cups for everyone, including Than, who'd come down from his chambers. Dante and Blaze laid out the events of the last few days. Lyra watched, sharp-eyed, interjecting any details they'd forgotten. Morn gazed into his beer. Occasionally he verged on a smile. By the time the story finished, Brant gazed at Morn with awed horror.
"You just stood there? While she shot you?"
Morn shrugged.
"The risk to the challenger is why so few challengers get married. What would the world be like if you could kill your leader whenever you wanted? It would be a pretty bad world, I'd say."
"That sounds awful enough as it is," Than said.
Brant considered all this over a long drink.
"Do you trust the clan to keep their word?"
"I do,"
Dante said. "The Norrin tend to be honest. On the rare times they're not, they're so devious you won't know you've been tricked until it's too late to matter."
"You lot are trouble."
The farmer grinned.
"I'm glad we're on the same side."
The other baronets filtered in through the evening. Once again, they didn't push for details until after a dinner of pork ribs with mustard seeds and pillowy yellow bread studded with dried cherries. Dante and Blaze then told the story again,
their words clumsied by beer. At the end, the lords laughed, heads shaking. Even gaunt old Ray shook Morn's hand.
"You're very stupid, or very brave."
Morn shrugged for the 100th time that day.
"If I were very stupid, you couldn't trust my answer either way, so I suppose we must conclude it's bravery. Until the next time I run away."
Ray laughed gruffly. Brant poured beer. Dante paced himself as best he could under the festive circumstances. He still needed to speak to Callie. He didn't get the opportunity until several hours passed on the clock and several refills passed through his bladder. In the quiet of his upstairs room, Dante clicked his brooch to the old man's setting. Callie answered seconds later.
"How goes the hunt?"
"Oh, hands it up," Dante said. "We've got the grain."
"Stupendous," Callie said in his ear. "How'd you manage that? Did anyone die?"
Dante took a long breath, preparing to relate the story for the third time that day, then shook his head.
"Too drunk. Just get a bunch of silver in a wagon and steer it this way. I'll tell you more tomorrow. Afternoon."
"This is nonsense. I fund your trip around the country, and you get so drunk you can't even tell me about it."
Dante belched.
"You can either hear it told crummy tonight, or told well tomorrow."
"Worthless."
Callie sighed. "It better be worth the wait." In the morning, of course, Dante was little more articulate than the night before. Fortunately, any early morning updates to Callie were staved off by breakfast and packing and goodbyes to Brant and Gilla, and then, after the ride back to the main road, by concerns they were going the right way. Fan assured them they were. And then by the pressing need to keep both eyes open for bandits, poor footing, and the general lay of the western land. Thin clouds skidded across skies so bright they practically crackled. The wind no longer felt so cold. Snow rested on the southern peaks, but those were 50 miles away or more. It felt, at last, like the first days of spring. Chapter 11. And over the next few days, spring acted like it had something to prove. Lukewarm gales battered the high grasses, followed by days-long rains that soaked their cloaks and left the horses steaming and gamey. Most nights they slept under tarps in the fields. Anywhere with an inn, however, Dante shelled out for a night under a roof and a morning next to a kitchen. If there was ever a time to keep spirits and energy high, it was now, when they might not taste success again for many weeks and many leagues. Callie was unreservedly pleased to hear about the deal they'd swung in Tatonin. A caravan had already been dispatched to bring the initial payment to the farmers and pick up whatever reserve grain they could part with before the first harvests. In the meantime, nothing major had emerged from Setevan. The king's men had dispatched a small force from Dolandan to put down riots on the eastern fringes of the territories, but the matter was expected to resolve quickly and without a fight. The Norrin lands had never been wholly peaceful. The clans were too numerous, grudgeful, and splintered to wholly resist the urge to raid and squabble, but they had always melted into the hills and forests at the first sign of Gascon troops. "Don't be afraid to push them on the pass," Callie had concluded, referring to Dante's strategy towards the merchants of Galador Rift. "They talk quite sweetly about water's ability to overcome, but how long will it take to wear a new way through the mountains, How much tea will rot on their shores when the Dundon Pass is shut to all those new markets in Malin?"
"I'm not sure how convincing that will be," Dante said. "We don't control the pass, and never have."
"Yes, well, whatever comes of all this, we can all but guarantee a shake-up of the administration of the Norrin territories, can't we?
And which city is the largest and closest, and thus most likely to wind up with de facto control of the pass? What do you think I'm bending Duke Cullen's ear about right now?"
Nothing, I'd hope. Or he must be very confused about what Azir has done to deserve it. Oh, enough of your negativity. I'm beginning to think these things might be more curse than blessing.
Kali shut down the loon. The land sloped upward, mile by mile, a rise as gentle as a fog. Blue mountains sat in proud deltas to the northwest. The road bent to meet them. They stopped at a simple town astride a swift and rocky stream. Dante settled them in at the inn, a two-story rectangle with flared eaves and a mill wheel splashing in the turbid creek. The bartender's eyes were dark and bright and stayed locked to Dante's brooches, which he hadn't bothered to hide due to the semi-official nature of their trip. Anyway, it was good for the priests of Narashtavik to be outside the citadel. Too many rumors flew about what they did behind their walls. See a man enjoying a beer, and it's much harder to believe he'll be speaking with demons later that night. The bartender lingered after delivering Dante his second and final beer, gaze pinned to the ivory carving of the white tree.
Are you from Narashtavik?
Dante nodded, somewhat guarded. For the last few years, anyway. Malinborn.
There's word you've had a hand in the Norrin troubles.
The man glanced around the room, as if to reassure himself the walls sported no ears.
If the king's army comes to the territories, do you think Narashtavik will be safe?
Unless the king has a thing for sacking innocent lands. Anyway, Narashtavik is the seat of Aron. Why are you worried?
My sister lives in the city. I wonder if...
The door opened, welcoming a cold wind and two sour-looking men. The bartender straightened and left to greet them. He glanced Dante's way more than once before Dante retired for the night, but didn't speak to him again until morning, and only then to say goodbye. From the town on the stream, the deeply rutted dirt road became a highway of travel-worn stones glued together with sandy cement. Here and there, a weed poked from the cracks, but otherwise the road looked younger than Dante himself. Traffic grew more frequent. Two mule farming wagons, peasants on foot, caravans with bright banners and the brighter spears of mercenaries. They reached the road into the mountains 8 days out from Tatonen. Three great peaks stood from the mounded hills, their slopes green, their caps white. Shorter mountains ran along a line that extended some 30 miles northeast and southwest. The pass was an easy climb, cold but snowless, the stone road carrying them past grasslands squishy with meltwater. High-peaked homes and warehouses formed a township just below the crest of the pass. With the shadows of the mountains swallowing the road, Dante stopped for the night. Dawn warmed the green lowlands, but hadn't yet reached the top of the pass by the time they crossed to the other side. Below, a great lake twinkled between the misty rims of the valley, miles in length, and impenetrably blue, dwarfing the waters Morn had dueled beside in the wilds of Tatonen. In spots, the mountains descended in sheer cliffs, the road switchbacking along the face of the grass-tufted rock. Below the cliffs, the land was carved into terraces, giant green steps leading down to the lake. Thick, green bushes grew in serpentine rows. Their leaves smelled spicy and sweet and rich. Tea bushes, the product of which was boiled, strained, and served across Gask, Malin, and every other island, province, and territory the tradesmen of Galador could reach. Without breaking stride, Blaze snapped off a tea branch, stripped its leaves, and tucked them into a satchel, scattering the twigs beside the road. Lyra watched him steadily. Blaze rolled his eyes at her.
They won't stink like thievery once we boil them.
She shook her head.
Bad seeds make for bitter brew. Oh, what do time-honored proverbs know? I never met a pure seed in my life.
Maybe you need to travel in